We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
That's a hell of a haircut.
Business man on the MMA community.
Man, I am so sorry for those people that don't know what Gilbert's talking about. You've got the patience of a saint, my brother. So I messaged Gilbert. I said, you're good for the podcast. Can we do Wednesday? Can we do this? Can we do that? I must have changed it on you five times. And then
at least.
yeah. Then I'm like, are we good for 2 p.m.? And you're like, yeah, I am. Are you? I was just telling Brian and Harrington. Oh, shit, man. How you been?
I'm good, bro. Crazy hard week. Training camp, you know how it is. Like, a couple of days are worse. So today was another war day, but it was good.
Yeah, you do look a little tired, if I'm honest.
I do. No, I am. I am just recovering now. We spar. I had 5 rounds today. Like, on the beginning, I think next week I'm going to do 3 and 3. But leading up to the fight, we do a lot of volume. So we do more rounds. We want to be ready. So I've been doing a lot of 5 rounds. I'm very happy that next week is going to drop to 3 rounds. So it should be a little bit easier. But I'm freaking tired today.
Yeah, of course, you got a big fight coming up soon, though. Jack Della Maddalena. He's a great boxer. He's an awesome guy as well. Yeah, I've been around Jack a little bit. Nice guy, really nice guy. What do you make of him?
He's a tough dude. You know, I cornered against him in the Contender Series. When he went to the Contender Series, he fought one of my teammates, Angie Lusa. And Angie's tough, bro. Angie's very strong guy. He born in Congo. He grew up in Switzerland. He went to Switzerland after the war, but he grew up in Congo, bro. All those guys are huge. And that was a toe-to-toe fight. He won by decision. Jack won by decision. Later, Orange got one more win, got to the UFC, but I was there very close watching. And I saw how durable and how tough this guy is. And his hands are so sharp. And people kind of making a mistake because 2 fights ago, he fought Basil Hafez, that guy that was a short notice. He got a fight in like a week notice, something like that, when Sean Brady pulled out. And Jackie got taken down a couple of times, but he kind of, like the way I see, he was trying to grapple more. He was trying to catch the guy on the guillotines. He put himself out there trying to improve, you know, trying to get better. People kind of always going to be thinking, I don't think so. I think the guy is legit. He's strong because I know how strong Angie is, and those guys were like toe-to-toe, like, oh my God, that guy's going to be strong. So I respect the guy. 6-0 in the UFC is not for everyone. Like, we know how tough the UFC is. And hungry guy, upcoming. And I knew whenever he doesn't have a fight coming up, he's tough. People for sure be saying no. When my phone rings, I knew I gotta solve a problem for Shane Shelby. So when they asked for this matchup, I said, yes, you know, I like this fight. This guy's tough. He deserves a big fight. I'm not going to be the guy that hold to no one's position. You know, if he deserves, let's do it. Let's fight for it. Let's see what you got. You know, I like that fight.
Yeah, well, as you say, 6 in a row. He's building a good name. He's well-respected by all the fighters. And you're one of the best welterweights on planet Earth. Last time we saw you was against Bilal Muhammad.
Yes.
And I know you injured your shoulder going for a takedown. Was that round one?
Yeah, first round.
How frustrating was that fight for you?
Extremely frustrating. Like, taking nothing away from Bilal Muhammad, he went out there and he won the fight. But yeah, I was compromised the beat, like half 2 minutes and a half to 3 minutes on the first round. I was compromised, couldn't do this. Nothing in my left arm. It was super frustrating. Just especially that was a short notice, and I had fight in Brazil against Neil Magny, 4 months without him in Miami. That was just a couple weeks after I was fighting again. 3 fights in 5 months was a lot. But physically, mentally, I was freaking ready to be out there and cannot do nothing that you train. I couldn't shoot for a takedown. I couldn't throw nothing. I could throw a couple right hands and a couple kicks, but that's it. That's not even half of my game. So, yeah, was very frustrating to be there 5 rounds and not be able to kind of execute, not even half of what I'm capable of.
Yeah, and I understand you probably want to be careful what you say, because people always say, oh, he's making excuses.
No.
But that's not an excuse. That's legit. I mean,
he won't. Yeah, the guy won't. Fair enough. You know, he won't. He went out there. Yeah. I was a little bit frustrated in the beginning because I want to go on my shield. You know, I cannot do much. Freaking try to finish him. He didn't even try it. But he just needed a win. You know why he risked? You know, I kind of take it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in peace with that. I think he went out there. He got a win. Your opponent got hurt. It is what it is, so not much to say about Bilal Muhammad. And I got her. The guy didn't do nothing wrong, and he deserves a title shot, but it's just freaking frustrating situation. When and the phone call is, if you get the win, you fight for the title, and then you're going, boof.
And oh, my God.
Plus 5 months of recovery.
Surgery?
No surgery, thank God. We have stem cells nowadays. I did 3 shots of stem cells. It helped me big time. I avoid the surgery by super close. I have fractures on my ligaments on the deltoid and on the AC joint. AC joint, it doesn't look normal now. It looks a little bit up, but it's normal. I can do anything with my shoulder. It's 100% healed, but yeah, I was frustrated.
Did you feel the benefits from the stem cell? Because I'm talking to a company called BioAccelerator.
Yeah, I almost went there. I was so close to go there. But then I think, I'm not pretty sure, but when I talk to the UFC, I think you don't need that problem. But someone got caught with USADA, something out there. Right. So they don't want to risk me to go out of the country. So UFC found the guy here in Salt Lake City, and they sent the stem cell for me. So I did it here. But I was that close. We were in talks. I was almost going to Colombia, but last minute UFC asked me to not to go.
Well, I'm going to go to Colombia. I'm going to do some stem cells because my back's fucked.
To be honest, after the fight, I went to the doctor, and doctor took an MRI. He said, man, it looks bad. I think you're going to need a surgery, but let's try to do a stem cell for a month. I'm going to do the stem cell. I'm going to order this week. I put the stem cell. We wait for a month. I don't want you to do anything. You just can't walk. I don't want you to run. I don't want you to lift. I don't want you to do anything. And wait 1 month, and we're going to see after that. So after 1 month, I got back. We took another MRI. And he said, see, it's healing. We don't think you're going to need another surgery. Let's put another stem cell. So I put a second stem cell. I got back after like a month or so, and I got back slowly with the PT, and they put another stem cell, and their shoulder was finally kind of responding, getting better.
And now Gilbert's back, 100%, ready to rock, ready to take on Australia's finest, Jack Della Maddalena, UFC 299, Miami, let's fucking go.
Let's go, got me fired up now, let's go.
Put it, I'm going down to Colombia, I'm going to get stem cells, I'm coming out of retirement, I'm going to fucking do it. Me and you, main event. I'm joking, of course. I'm excited for you to come back, Gilbert. I love watching you fight. You're one of the coolest guys in all of mixed martial arts. I want to ask you about the fights this weekend, UFC 298 going down. There's a guy fighting on there in your weight class. You used to train with him. He's from Ireland. He's called Ian Garry. He's taking on Jeff Neal. Obviously, this is your weight class. What do you think about that fight?
It's a tough fight, to be honest. I think Jeff Neal hits super, super hard, has good boxing. I just think he's very inconsistent. And the results show it, because I remember even back in the days, he bro, he beat, I think he was the last guy, one of maybe the last one to beat Bilal Muhammad, and he destroyed Bilal Muhammad. And on the next fight, he was fighting Neil Magny, the guy that kind of very tough, have a record on the welterweight division, but kind of like he's not consistent too. Get a couple wins, lose. It's kind of that. And then he lost to Neil Magny. And then he got a couple wins and then he lost and then canceled a lot of fights got canceled and then he doesn't make weight a couple times. Last time he didn't make weight. Last one he got canceled against Ian. I think he's very inconsistent with his performance. Sometimes he show up like, oh my God, like that guy can become a champion. Sometimes he shows up like, so with that being said, Ian is very consistent. That I like the guy a lot. He's crazy. He likes to talk. When I fought Hamza Shimaev, he fought on the same card, and that guy don't stop talking. He has a crazy energy that I like, bro, I like you, but leave me alone for a little bit. I need to focus on my fight. And we really had that conversation. And he's still my guy. He called me a week ago. We're still cool. He's still a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I think he's very consistent. And he has one thing that he has that Joff knew, failed a couple of times, is the gas tank. After COVID or something like that, he said that in one of his interviews, he's very afraid to get tired. Sometimes he slowed down a lot on the second round. That's when he lost to Neil Magny. Even Shavkat, that's when Shavkat started putting a pace on him on his last fight. If you get a little problem with gas tank, if you're just a striking fighting another striker, Ian Garry has a crazy gas tank. That guy can, he's so fast and he has the volume for days. That's what I'm taking. If I'm taking the consistency from Ian, the speed, the volume, the momentum, and if you got Geoff New inconsistent, lost a couple times, gas tank little issue, I got Ian Garry winning that fight. Not easy.
Interesting.
Geoff New can finish that fight with one shot. That guy hits like a heavyweight. But is he going to hit Ian Garry? That's the question. I don't think so, especially on the beginning. That guy is so fast. Good eyes, good movement. I think Ian Garry is going to get away.
Look at this guy. He's like an ESPN analyst. You're coming for our job, Gilbert. You mentioned a second ago, when you went down and did the stem cells, they said, don't do anything for 4 weeks, right? When I had that back in the day, you know, they tell you to rest. As fighters, it's the hardest goddamn thing to do nothing. Like when I did my eye, they said, do nothing. I couldn't train. I couldn't even get my heart rate up. Oh, it was about 3 months. I just sat on the couch drinking lots of beer, watching Sopranos. I got fat as fuck. And then I said, screw it. And I went for a walk and my retina re-detached. Did you struggle sitting around for a month?
I did, man. Especially coming from a loss. It hurt me, to be honest, because we are fighters, we're competitors, and we're going to make a mistake. And I wish we were winning every time, but we're not. We're going to lose. We're going to deal with that. But the best way for me to deal with a loss is to go back to work as quick as possible, watch the fight multiple times and start working on my mistakes and get better and drilling and do it again, get better. And then when he said nothing, I said nothing, he said no, nothing. I said, oh my God. So
tell him, thank God.
And then I went to the gym and said, you know what? I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to help a couple guys.
Work around it.
Oh my, that was the worst. So I went to the gym and I saw a couple guys doing a great job. Don't get me wrong. A couple guys were working their butt off. They trying to get ready to a fight. But a couple guys were lazy and like not working. Then I was looking, then it made me feel even worse, you know, like, man. I went to the gym like for 3-4 days and they say, I'm not going to the gym. It's making me even more anxious. It's getting worse. And then I was kind of, I got to make a routine. I got to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to get crazy. I'm already a little bit depressed. I don't want to get to a high level of depression. I don't want nothing to happen. And I said, and then I had a conversation with my wife. I got to do something. And then she said, what about you help me with the kids? I help me with the things at home. And then I said,
why don't you try being a father? Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you make the bed?
Yes.
Vacuum the house.
And they say, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. You know, I'm going to give it a try. So That was it. That kind of helped me out a lot. I started like waking up early, helping the kids to get up to school. It was even taking a lot of pressure away from her, you know. So, and then I was biking with the kids. We the school's like 3 blocks away from the house. So we were biking to school and then come back. And then I was kind of helping out with the home, doing things that I hate to do it, but I had good times. So I started doing and go pick up the kids, stay with the family more. And then they had a vacation. Then they had a summer. So we went to Brazil, we went to different places. And then I started going to the fights. And then I slowly got back to do PT. So that was the thing. I had to make a new routine. That transition when I wasn't doing anything, I was so bad. But after 2 weeks of me adjusting, making a new routine, that helped big time.
Gilbert Burns, the housewife. Yeah. What is the worst thing, the worst job that you hate the most in a house? Being a father, how old are your children?
9 and 10.
All right, so you're not changing diapers. There's none of that.
No, they cook. Does
Gilbert Burns cook?
I can cook, bro. I can cook good. So I cook a couple times. I'm regular every day. I do the breakfast. I'm the guy that I wake up. I'm a morning guy. So my wife is still sometimes a little slow picking up the pace. So I wake up the kids, help them to change, shower. Then I go down and start making the food, making everything. So it was actually fun. I was helping out, being more with the family, with the wife, with the kids, like being more. That was actually nice. I kind of need that a little bit. I cannot fight. I cannot train. So I need to get exit from that for a little bit and get the other part of Gilbert Burns working. So it was nice.
Yeah, no, that's like nice quality time that when you're training for a fight, you don't really get to do that. But let me ask you, American breakfast or a Brazilian breakfast? Nah, and what is a Brazilian breakfast? Oh, American.
Yeah, Brazilian breakfast is like pound cage, you know, when they do the cheese bread. It's a nice cheese bread. And we do a lot of, like, it's not much. We do like freaking bread with butter. It's super simple, coffee, little things. But I do American. I do eggs. I do bacon. I do pancakes. I do everything. So kids love when I do. So I do a lot. They actually like my breakfast burrito that I make today. Oh. So I'm making a tortilla, I put avocado, I got eggs, I got bacon, I got cheese on top of the egg. So I make a nice breakfast burrito for the kids. They love it.
That sounds amazing. I'm actually starving. So this morning we had the fighter meetings for the fights this weekend, right? Because they're in Anaheim, close to where I live. So I drive down the hotel and I'm starving. And we had the fighter meetings and it's Thursday. So the fighters are cutting weight. Yes. And I run out. And I'm looking for a snack and I get a breakfast burrito, right? It wasn't the best, but because I was so hungry, it tasted like the best thing ever. Yeah. And the fires are coming in and I'm like, eating this huge burrito. Let me ask you, you're cutting weight, you walk in to do the fire meeting and some fat British bastard is sitting there stuffing his face with a burrito. What are you saying? Hey, bro. Have a bit of respect for the process, or do you not care?
I was with no respect anymore, right? Now I don't need to cut weight. Now we're having fun, right?
Exactly. All right, guys, let's talk about PrizePicks.com, who have sponsored today's episode. PrizePicks is the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and they are the easiest and the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of taking on all the pros and the sharks, and it's just you against the numbers, you pick more or less, okay? It really is that easy, okay? So if you're a basketball fan, Steph Curry, will he get over or under 30.5 points? It's that simple. Damian Lillard, will he get over or under 26.5 points? And if you want to talk about Draymond Green, over or under 0.5 made 3-point shots. I mean, that's all you got to figure out. It's up to you. Take the test, pick your prize, and let's go to the races. Right now, when you go to prizepicks.com and use the code BELIEVE, you can get a deposit match of up to $100. You can 25x your money. You can turn $10 into $250 with just a few simple taps. Prize Picks is simple to play. It is available where you get your payment via Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account this football or basketball season. What more do you want? You want the website one more time. PrizePicks.com/believe. Use the code believe for a deposit match of up to $100. Let me ask you about this as well, because this is crazy. This weekend, Ilia Topuria, Volkanovski, great fight. Yesterday, I was speaking to Topuria. He says, and because I heard this, so I asked him about it. I did an interview. When he's cutting weight on the Thursday night, he drinks half a liter of wine, right? And he said most rooms, everyone's, you know, the sad, they're angry, they're hungry, the mood is very, you know how it is when you're cutting weight, it sucks, right? He said in his room, everyone's getting drunk, right? They're playing music, they're singing, they're dancing, half a liter of wine, that's a lot of glasses of wine, right? And then he wakes up the next morning and he's like way lighter. And I was like, that just sounds batshit crazy.
But he's doing it for real?
100%. That's what he does. He drinks half a liter of wine.
I'll be so drunk and hangover the other day. I cannot drink. I don't drink. So when I used to drink, I used to be so weak. So I get one beer or one something. That was like crazy, upside down, going crazy, talking crazy. That's why I stopped, because I said, bro, if I drink one cup, if I drink one little beer, and then I get, it makes
more,
me
more,
go crazy.
More.
So I don't think it's good for me. I kind of slow down and I stop it. I don't drink. If I drink a little bit of that, I'm going to be so hangover the other day.
Yeah.
No way I'm fighting. No.
That's what I said. I said, did you not have a crazy headache? And then I'm like, I've been doing it wrong this whole time. Because when I was training wrong for a fight, I never drink.
Especially you, I'm like, drink.
I should have been getting fucking drunk this whole time. I would have been champion of the goddamn world. When's the last time you had a drink, Gilbert?
I think like 3 years ago, maybe.
Yeah,
four?
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good for you. Well done. You're still down at Killcliffe?
Yes, we're here at Killcliffe. We're doing a good work. By the way, that fight's going to be insane. Topuria and Volkanovski. Who you got winning this fight?
Well, I'm commentating, so I can't say.
You can't say?
Well, because it's disrespectful, right? It's not very professional for me to say, I think this guy's going to win. But you can. You can say who wins.
I like both guys, to be honest. Topuria came, he did a camp here. He's a monster. He's a great grappler, great striking, great wrestler too. Good takedown defense, good takedown offensive. Hits like, he knocked a couple guys down bad. Like he hits that hard.
Really?
He's that good. He's very, very good. Nice guy too, though. And I like Volkanovski a lot too. A monster. You don't have enough. I just don't like what he was saying. You know, I don't like the motivation to the fight. You know, I think every fight you have a little motivation, you want to become a champion. Like, I like the motivation for Topuria better now. He wants to become a champion. He believes he's going to be the champion. And I just saw little things from Volkanovski. Oh, I got a fight on short notice because I have to fight. Meaning I had a little mental issue. Shoot, when I don't have a day, when I don't have a fight. And then he got a fight on short notice, and then he got knocked out. So I think, my opinion, I'm not judging, it's just my opinion. So it's not a fact, too. So he got a fight on short notice, right? End up losing. And you got a fight on short notice. I got a fight on short notice. You become a champion freaking short notice. But you know even better. Sometimes it's a good decision. Sometimes your body feels good. Sometimes you don't regret, like, man, that was a good thing. But sometimes it's not. It's not every time that you get fight on short notice that means things are going your way. And I just think he made a mistake because he just lost the guy in a short notice. Higher weight cut. He said he was drinking the whole week. So obviously it wasn't a good decision. So now, if I just made a mistake, if I made a bad decision, now I got to make a good decision, right? So now I got to try to fix what I did wrong. And he's still trying to know, but now I got to right it wrong. I need to fight again. Need another day. Bro, you're still doing the same mistake. Relax. And freaking concussion protocol. How long is that? It's different to everybody. But that was a freaking high kick on a weight division guy. How long ago was that?
It was October, wasn't it? November, December, January, 4 months. That's not bad.
I know, but he sparred a lot for this fight. That's what it meant. Like, it's not that he was 4 months without getting hit. You know what I mean? Like, he'd been getting hit at least 2 months. He's sparring, at least sparring for this fight. So I just don't like that. Why you hurry, bro? You're the champion. Relax. You try a thing. It didn't work. No problem. Take a little time. Clean up the room. Clean up the house. Relax. Take your time. Go back.
Get the brush out. Get the mop.
Relax.
You know. Take the kids to school. Back,
but don't hurry. So with that being said, because that he's hurrying, he pushing, he trying to prove something. I don't like that motivation. I got to put a winning in. Nothing personal, because I do like both guys a lot. But that motivation from Topuria, I think it's a little bit better.
So if I'm hearing you rightly, Gilbert, I think what you're saying is, and I know you're a very respectful guy, but you think that maybe I hope this doesn't come across wrong, maybe a little bit of a mental weakness because he's so bothered about the loss. He wants to get back in there real quick and erase that. But potentially, that's a big risk, and it could end up going wrong.
I would not say mental weakness, but I'll say it's a little bit his ego trying to. I do think that ego gotta be in control. Even that freaking ego that we do have, that we want to compete, that want to sometimes gotta be on check. You know, sometimes we gotta. Especially, he's a freaking champion of the world, like a monster. I have nothing to prove. You lost to Islam. Okay, it was a couple of weeks' notice. No problem. My guy, take your time. Relax. Get better. Oh, I have a problem. If I don't have a date, work on that problem. Solve that problem. Fix that problem. Then come back. Relax. The war's not going to finish in, I mean, we don't know, but the war's not supposedly not finishing 3 months or 4 months. Relax. So I don't like that. I still like the guy a lot, and I hope he does a good job. But I don't bet you. But if I was betting, I'll put money into Puria because I think that motivation to become a champion, the guy's coming like.
So Saturday night, Spain/Georgia has the first ever champion of the world. That's what you're saying?
I think so. Yeah.
Man, don't say that. I love. Do you know what? I love them both. I was talking to Topuria yesterday as well, and he really won me over. They're just such a nice guy because the things you see online makes you think that he's really arrogant. I spoke to him, and this guy was so respectful, and he was confident, of course, because you know, as fighters, we got to be confident. But he was a great guy. And Volkanovski, the exact same thing.
They're both nice guys. And another thing, and we lost by KO to KO, right? We hate that, but it happens. How did you come back on the next fight, Bisping?
How did I come back?
Yeah, on the next fight. Maybe a little...
I know what you're saying. When I got knocked out against Dan Henderson, when I came back, I was like, you're a little worried.
I hope that doesn't go away. You know, I hope that stays here.
Yeah, but you don't know. And it's a good point what you bring up. These are real questions, you know. Number one, there's everyone saying because he's 35 now and there's this statistic that over 35, it's hard to win the fights and he's a lightweight. Then when you get the knockout, you know, at some point, I know he wasn't asleep, but still, he did get kicked in the head. So I understand what you're saying, but you never know. I guess there's only one way to settle this.
Yeah, we're going to watch it. Yes, sir. But
they fight.
I just don't like those questions. We shouldn't be answering those questions. If he relaxes a little bit, if he takes his time, those questions will be all answered. But freaking guy, he's a monster too. I got to respect that. Yeah. He don't care. He's going to come to the fight. So it should be a great fight.
Yeah, Volkanovski, he's one of the coolest guys as well. Yes. He really is. He's like, there's no ego to him at all. You know, same with you, Gilbert. You know, I message some people. I say, can you get on the podcast? You know, Volk, you always say yes, even though I changed the time 15 times. Volkanovski's like, straight away. Other people are like, you got to go through my manager. And I'm like, kiss my ass, man. Go through your manager. Fuck off.
Right. No respect to the fighters, right? We're fighters. Come on.
Yeah. It's like, come on, dude. I'll jump on your podcast. Outside of the training and the fight coming up soon, what else have you been doing? I know you've been looking after the kids. You've been making the American breakfast. Anything new in the world of Gilbert Burns?
Not much, to be honest. Now a lot of focus on the fight. Right now. I'm kind of like zoning out, taking everything away, and then zoning in the fight. And then a couple of weeks, you got 2.5 more of training, then we're in a fight week. So right now, not much. Just focus on the fight, recovery. For sure, stay with the family, spend a lot of time with the family. Yeah. But focus on the fight right now.
Real quick, what do you think about Kevin Holland and Michael Venom Page? Obviously, Page is making his UFC debut. Kevin Holland, we all know and love this guy. How do you think that fight goes?
Good fight. Good matchup. It's going to be interesting too. Especially they probably not going to grapple. It's going to be an interesting stand-up fight with freaking two awkward guy with crazy style. I don't know who is. I don't know. I think if MVP wins, he's going to shake up the division a little bit. But even if Kevin wins, you know, like, we'll see. I don't know. I like this fight. I'm not even putting so much attention, but it's going to be a good fight. I like this fight.
Okay, and then let's bring it back to you. So you fought for the belt. You had a really great fight against Kamaru Usman. You are still one of the top welterweights in the world. It was a shame what happened last time, but it is what it is. Does the drive to be the champion, it's still there. Yeah. It's still the same. It's still the goal, right?
100%. I still believe it's going to happen. I still have a lot of fire. That's what get me training. That's what literally will get me going. And I think if I cannot make it, or it's kind of get one loss and then I got another loss, I'm done, you know, because I'm not. I can do a lot of things. I can become Michael Bisping, go do a little commentary, make a podcast, get a couple sponsors, get a couple seminars. I can make money without fighting. I just like to fight and I want to become the best. But I don't think I'm going to be fighting just for paycheck, you know, like a lot of guys do. Oh, you want to be a champion? No, I just want to make money. That's my health and risk, you know. If it's not to become a champion, no way I'm going to teach, I'm going to podcast, I'm going to do other things. But right now, I want to become a champion. I'm all in to become a champion. I think I'm super close, number 4 now in the world.
Yep.
Beating Jack Maddalena, just winning, I don't think you're going to do so much. But if I go out there and I make a statement, really finish this guy, show him levels, this division, let him and everyone know that I've been fighting the best guys in the world for years, not for 1 year, but for 4 or 5 years in the top of this division, yep. fighting who is who in this division. If I go over there and really do what I want to do with this guy, I think I'm going to be very close to get another title shot.
Yeah. Well, I hope it goes your way. And well, may the best man win, because I like Jack as well. Yes. But yeah, I just last thing, because I was going to say goodbye, but you just said there, if it didn't go your way, you'd probably retire. I was talking to Henry Cejudo, and he said the same thing. He said, if I lose to Merab on Saturday night, he said, that's it, I'm done. He said, I'm not here just to make a living. I want to be the champion. And if I can't win and I can't be the champion, I'm done. And I respected that so much. Because you're right, there is a lot of people. You make good money. You get attention. You get sponsors. You know, you get the cheers and the fans and all the rest of it. But he is only, and you, of course, only interested in becoming the champion.
For sure. I think there's a lot of room to make money outside of that. And I'm not gonna say retired. I never gonna put that word on my mouth until I say it. So yeah. I'm not even putting there like Henry Cejudo, but I'm here for the win. You know, I'm going to do everything in my power to get this win, but I don't want to be that guy that we kind of know that guy never going to become a champion. He don't even want it, but he just want to be around. I don't want to be this guy, you know, so I'm here to become a champion and do good fights, entertaining everyone that is there watching the fights, the people, guys that are at home watching the fights. I want them to be entertained. I want them to feel my energy when I'm fighting. You know, I'm going out there to destroy this guy, to put on a show and to become a champion. That's the goal.
Well, you always put a show on, Gilbert. Whether or not you've got a torn shoulder or not, we love watching you. Gilbert, thanks for your time today, brother. Really, really appreciate it. I know you're tired. You're like, this fucking asshole. Let me get off this call. I'm tired. Are you going to take a nap right now? You look like you're going to go to sleep.
I'm going to the hyperbaric chamber, so probably a little nap in there.
Okay. Well, enjoy the nap, buddy. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, my guy. Thank you.
All right, Gilbert. Big thanks to Gilbert Burns. He did look exhausted, didn't he, Harrington?
Yeah, dude, he was powering through for sure.
Yeah, I know. Bless him. He's probably like, Bisping, we just wrap this up. This has been half an hour. You said 10 minutes on Instagram. Harrington, you look like you've had a tub of paint thrown all over you.
Yeah, dude, that's what fashion is nowadays, man.
You are correct. Anytime I wear something remotely stylish, I get people in the comment section saying, oh, look at Bisping dressing like Brendan Schaub or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, dude, leave me alone. I had a purple t-shirt on a couple of episodes ago, and everyone's like, look, what is he wearing? It's like, shut up, you miserable pricks. Normally I wear a plain black t-shirt. These are $24.99 from Built, BYLT. It's pretty much what I live in. All right, this episode is sponsored by Shopify. And if you are an entrepreneur, if you have a business idea, if you want to make some money, you got to be online. Now, getting online, building a website sounds complicated, time-consuming, and very, very expensive. Well, not with Shopify. Shopify makes it ridiculously easy and ridiculously cheap. Right now, they will build you a website, essentially. They will allow you to accept every single major payment method. They will give you 24/7 customer help. They will provide an extensive business course library, and they will support you every step of the way for $1 per month. For a limited time, of course. You can sign up for $1 per month when you go to shopify.com/believe all lowercase. If you have an idea, if you want to get online, if you have a business, it's time to do it. It's time to take the plunge. And there's never been a better time, because $1 per month, I'll say it again, $1 a month, that's ridiculously cheap. It is packed with all the industry tools that you need to ignite your growth. Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without learning any new skills in design or code. It lets you sell across all the different marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, so on and so forth. So take the plunge today. Go to shopify.com/believe, all lowercase, $1 per month for a trial period. Shopify.com/believe. Your thoughts on this main event, Harrington? Because Volkanovski, I understand what Gilbert was saying. I do. But I also understand the mindset of Volkanovski, right? Because I think 4 months is fine. I really do. I don't think he's rushing back too soon. He is getting older. I don't know what he gets paid. He gets paid a lot of money. He wants to be back in fight camp. He wants to eradicate that memory or loss of memory, whichever way you want to put it, of losing to Islam Makhachev, because you're only as good as your last fight. He wants to remind the world and probably a little bit himself, prove that he's still got it and he's still the man. Problem is, Ilia Topuria, he was walking around yesterday, the hotel, with the belt on. There was a little interaction with Volkan Topuria. They're very gentlemanly, like, there's been no shit talk. Topuria's been very, very respectful, although he is firmly of the belief that he goes out there and smokes him. And when you talk to him, it's not just hype. You know what I mean? He does truly believe that. And there is people like Gilbert that have trained with him that are of the same opinion. But you got to remember, this is Volkanovski. And when you look at their resumes on paper, Volk's probably, well, he has fought the better people. What is your opinion and what is your pick?
I mean, it's so tough because I've been on Volkanovski since this fight was announced. Like, it's so, so difficult to pick against this guy. But Gilbert made a great point. Like, you know, you're saying 4 months is enough time, and I agree in general, but I mean, it's just, you're 35 years old, right? You just got, like, clean KO'd by, you know, a lightweight.
Or was it a TKO?
He was still awake. Yeah, but he was, like, slumped over. Like, I don't know.
He was having a bad day.
Yeah, it was a rough visual for sure. It's the worst I think anyone has ever seen, you know, Volkanovski look in a cage. So to have this fight now 4 months later and add a weight cut in, you know, cutting back down to 145. Like, there is just something about a guy being that confident, that sure of himself, that whole, like, this is my destiny, my story. Like, it, you know, one of these guys is going in there with way more doubts in his mind. You just can't tell me that Ilya Topuria is not the more confident guy heading into this fight. And 9 times out of 10, that's who I'm going to side with.
You know, regarding the 4 months thing, and the reason I say that it's fine is because I've done that and I was fine. And it was after that Henderson one. But of course, I'm no doctor. I'm no concussion expert. You know what I mean? I don't know the ins and outs of that side of things. I'm just speaking about my own personal experience. But Volk did say that he did a 14-week camp, right? So 14 weeks from now, that brings us into probably start of December, one would think, something roughly like that. And he said the reason he did that, and he said it's smart. I'm not going to count the weeks back because I could do. But he said, the reason I did that, and this, I wish I did stuff like this, because when you do a camp, the final week, you're kind of over it. You're kind of sick of it. You're just mentally, you're physically tired and beat up, but mentally, you're just over it. That's why at the end of every training camp, and you do your last spar, you're just like, thank God this process is over. Now it's fight week. Now it's the fun part. The hard work is done. He said, I trained about 4 or 5 weeks, first of all. He said, and then I took a couple of weeks off at Christmas. So he could indulge. He could have a good Christmas with his family. And then he picked up training after Christmas. But he said also, because then you get a mental and a physical break, and then you're hungry to get back into the training camp. So I really liked that approach, and I think that's really smart, and I'd like to do that. If I could do it again, I'd definitely try and implement that. So you didn't give a pick. Who wins?
I'm going to say Ilya Topuria.
Right. Brian, what say you?
I'm a Volk fanboy till the end, man. I think he's going to take it.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is it's a fantastic fight. And we can sit here and we've done it. Me and Anthony have broke it down several times. They're both very, very good at what they do. And I guess we're going to find out on Saturday. And we may have a new champion of the world. I'll tell you what, Ilya Topuria, not only does he drink loads of wine, right, which blew my mind, right? I was like, I like this guy. he rolls deep. He walked in. And he's got a team of about 25 people with him. I said, Jesus Christ, man, you're rolling like a world champion already. He said, oh, this is nothing. This isn't even all of my team that's with me. He has got a real posse around him. He's rolling deep down at the fighter hotel.
Bigger than Nate Diaz.
Say again?
Bigger than Nate Diaz's posse?
I don't know about that. Probably more respectable. They're not throwing water bottles and starting fights left, right, and center. Co-main event, Robert Whittaker, Paulo Costa. I spoke to Costa for the first time yesterday. I've said hi, of course, you know, exchanged pleasantries over the years. I've seen him around, said hi, whatever. But I had a proper conversation on my YouTube channel. What a lovely guy. What a lovely guy he was. And number one, he's absolutely ripped. He always is. And I was speaking to his coach. I think his name was Gilbert, his new strength and conditioning coach, but his mind coach. And they were talking about how Paolo's now finally got his mind right. And now he's this new animal. He's an absolute monster. He's a beast. And it's going to be the best performance ever. Of course, Robert Whittaker last time against Dricus du Plessis, right? He didn't go his way. We know what happened. He got dropped essentially by a jab and finished off. Robert asked us not to share this, so I can't, but he said he wasn't himself going into that fight. And he also talked about how complacent isn't the correct word, but because he's been a part of the UFC for so long and had so many big fights, and I know exactly what he means here, let me put it like this. When I first started fighting, it was just a blaze and a whirlwind of aggression, right? Then you learn to handle those emotions and you learn the sport. You get better technically. Right. And then after a while, you're over technifying, for want of a better word. You're over complicating it and you're making it all technical and this and that. And you kind of lose the animalistic side of it a little bit. You look at it as a sport as opposed to, hold on a minute, at the end of the day, we're in a good old fashioned fucking fight, dick to dick, nipple to nipple. Do you know what I mean? Right. And I asked him to clarify his remarks, and he kind of agreed that that's what it was. He kind of got away from that side of things. So he said in all of his training camps, it has been war. Every sparring session, he said he's been nasty as fuck. And that's what he's going to bring to Paulo Costa. He says he's taking it to him. He said, yeah, he's big, he's strong, he's formidable, he hits hard. But if I put him on his back foot, if I fucking take it to him and I just throw down and fight, that's the way to beat him. So Robert Whittaker is coming in here Saturday night with a point to prove, and he's going to be coming balls in all the way.
Dude, that is super exciting because, you know, we're talking maybe 5 years since we've had a motivated Robert Whittaker, you know, like the last time I can remember is like that image of him alone in the arena before he fights Israel Adesanya. Like from that point to this, he's had nothing to prove, right? Any of the top guys who he's fought outside of Dricus du Plessis, he's beaten with ease, you know, and they like if they want a big challenger to come up at a certain point for Israel Adesanya, they would navigate that guy away from Robert Whittaker, right? Like this is the no doubter, you know, number one contender in the division. Now he's been knocked off that perch, right? Dricus is sitting there, Sean Strickland sitting there. He has to prove something again. And that gets me super excited. Because like that, a motivated Robert Whittaker. Oof.
But that's exactly what I said to him, you know, when I was interviewing him yesterday. And I think, I don't know either, because it was the last interview of the day for me and for him. It was like almost 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's the day before the weigh cut. You're doing all your media and stuff like that. And you're tired, you're exhausted, and you're sick of it, right? And pretty early into the interview, I essentially said what you said. I said, for the longest time, it was you and Izzy, right? And I did say, clearly you were the next best guy, because the reality was Izzy was the champ for a long time. I said, but now the landscape has changed. Now you got Dricus du Plessis. You got Sean Strickland. You got Khamzat Chimaev. You got Bo Nickel coming up. There's all these new, there's a lot of new blood and a lot of new faces. And I don't know if he was just tired or that just kind of pissed him off, because the answers started getting really short. They're essentially yes or no answers. And I'm like, I love Robert Whittaker. He's one of the best human beings ever. And I was like, I was hating myself inside. I'm like, shit, I could have worded that maybe a little bit better. But either way, I think it's a tremendous fight. You know, I enjoy Paulo Costa, man. He's absolutely hilarious. He really is.
How can you not? I mean, the guy just brings entertainment, right? Like, think about when he fought Izzy for the belt and he was handing him out a white belt and, you know, talking about the nail.
Yeah, but I wouldn't bring that up as entertainment, because he didn't really fight and he ended up getting bloody finished easily and then dry humped.
Yeah, I know.
That's just not a selling point.
I'm saying he's managed to maintain his spot towards the top of the division despite some less than stellar results, because he is one of the most entertaining 185ers on the planet, and there's no denying that.
And Costa's only 32 years old. You know what I mean? You think, because he's been around for a long time now at the highest level. Think about that war that he had with Yoel Romero. That was 2017 or 18 maybe. God knows whenever it was. 7-8 years ago. And he's still only 32 years old. Who have you got winning in that one?
I mean, you know, if you're telling me this is a motivated Robert Whittaker versus a Paulo Costa that's, you know, been on his couch since he fought Luke Rockhold 3 years ago, I have to take Robert Whittaker in that fight. And I think this is a big yardstick, right? Because it's like, if Robert Whittaker doesn't win this one, then, you know, you know the writing's on the wall. So, you know, I'm not ready to let go of Robert Whittaker being, you know, championship caliber just yet.
Yeah, well, I did a YouTube video, basically UFC 298, what's at stake, or massive pressure on these four, because that was essentially it, what you just said there. For Volkanovski, right, if he loses this fight, not only does he lose the title, right, but he's lost two in a row, he's 35, and then people start to form an opinion that it's the end of the career. The end is nigh. The tide has changed. For Robert Whittaker, precisely the same thing, right? A former champion, tremendous fighter, lost to Dricus, can't beat Costa, new people coming up. Maybe the title aspirations could be a thing of the past. Ian Garry versus, who's he fighting again? My mind's gone blank.
Who? Jeff Neal.
Ian Garry, Jeff Neal. Gary's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders because he's talking, you know, he's saying what he's saying. He's very confident. He's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Sean Strickland's also joined in the rubbing of that to ensure the rub gets rubbed off, right? So, yeah, I think he's going to get booed out of the building Saturday night just because he's become this kind of pantomime villain to a certain degree, right? Maybe he welcomes it, you know, maybe he's partly to blame, maybe he's not, who knows? He does show up and he does fight. But the pressure to get the win on Saturday night is big, because if he loses to Jeff Neal, the tidal wave of the shitstorm that's going to come his way, he's going to be of epic proportions.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely, you know, Conor McGregor was able to navigate the whole being cocky without getting everybody to hate him until, you know, he started throwing dollies through bus windows and things of that nature. You know, like, he had already won the title. Ian Gary's already starting to rub these people the wrong way, talking about he's too big to bring a show back to Ireland. You know,
I didn't see that. Did he say that?
He said that at the media day today. He said, you know, I've been trying to bring it back to Ireland. Who knows? After I bury Jeff Neal in the octagon, I might be too big to bring a show back to Ireland.
That's what Paddy said, though, about the O2 Arena.
Mm-hmm.
Paddy said, oh, after this, I'll be too big for the O2 Arena. Granted, he hasn't come back yet, but the O2 Arena is one of the biggest venues in all of Europe, right? And it's probably bigger than, you know, it's up there with Madison Square Garden. Do you know what I mean? It's a big arena. I know he's speaking hypothetically, not hypothetically, proverbially.
Hyperbole?
He's speaking... a load of shit is what he's speaking. I forget the word right now. Jeff Neal's a bad man, though. Jeff, I've been watching his fights, doing my research, of course. Jeff Neal's got some proper power, man. Proper power. What's your pick on that one? And Brian, I'd like your opinion as well, please.
I don't know. There's something in my brain where, you know, like the bat signal's going off. He was booked against Vicente Luque. He's the one who got sick. And all of a sudden, they didn't want that Vicente Luque matchup anymore. Jeff Neal, your number's up. There's something in my brain that's saying Ian Gary is supposed to win this one. And I think his style is, you know, it's suited to beat Jeff Neal.
Just real quick, did you see what Jeff Neal did to Vicente Luque?
No, what's that?
He beat the shit out of him.
Jeff Neal won that fight. Yeah, okay.
Jeff Neal won that fight in stunning fashion. I mean, it was a hell of a beatdown. It really was. Brian, how do you see it? What's your pick?
I hope Ian Gary gets the shit kicked out of him. That's just how I feel about it. I'm just spite betting against him at this point.
And you're not pulling any punches on that, are you?
No.
Hey, listen. You have no allegiances to anybody. You can say whatever you want. And as a fan of the sport, then you're allowed your opinion.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's just the way he carries himself. He's great. You know, technically, everything we've seen out of him, he's been pretty impressive. I just hope he loses.
Oh, God.
I looked at him.
Podcast.
These are my opinions and my opinions alone.
I'm going to eat shit for that one. I don't care.
So, I'm sorry. I looked that up. You are correct. Jeff Neal did brutalize Vicente Luque. He's the one who sent Luque to the hospital and that kept him out of action for a year. So, yeah, good point. This is arguably a way more dangerous fight. So, yeah, good luck, Jeff Neal. Let's get it done, baby.
It's a tougher matchup. He was supposed to fight Luque, right? Gets pneumonia. Now he comes back with Jeff Neal. That's a tougher fight. I mean, all right, granted, MMA math doesn't always stack up. We know. But Jeff Neal's fired up for this one as well. He really is, because let's remember, Gary was walking around with a mugshot T-shirt, right?
He's still selling it.
It's wild.
Is he really?
Yeah. As far as the last I checked, he was still on his website. I'll check right now.
Yeah. You know, taking one of the lowest moments and then turning it into a T-shirt. If I was Jeff Neal, and I'm not suggesting this for one second, I'd be sending him a lawyer. I'd be getting them to send a decent cease and desist letter, or give me some of the profits, you prick. That's my face. Right, let's talk about this Henry Cejudo situation. Marab Dvalishvili, two great fighters. As I said before, Cejudo said, listen, if I don't win this, I'm going to retire. That's obviously putting a lot of pressure on himself, but also that's just who he is. That's kind of the ferocious competitor that he is. And he said something before today at the fighting meetings that I really liked, and you could call it a line from a movie, or you could call it hype or whatever. He said, I'm not here to be a fighter. I'm a conqueror. I've come to conquer these weight classes. I've conquered 125. I've conquered 135. I'm going to conquer 35 again, and then I'm going to conquer 45. And he said, if I can't beat Marab, then obviously I ain't conquering shit, and I'm going to retire. And like, listen, call it overconfident, call it whatever you will. But as a fan, as a guy sitting here calling the fights, I'm like, shit, that you got some good sound bites. Sound bites that didn't go down quite so well, though, was this whole thing with his coach, head coach, Eric Albarracin. I have been in the middle of this all week, right? Because Volkanovski said you're a piece of shit for doing it. Then it looks like the whole thing was a stunt. It was just a joke, right? Because on the countdown show, on the embed, it showed them all Pally and Pally and all the rest of it, and he's back in the corner, right? So I walk up, I said to Coach Eric, I'm like, you bastards. I said, you guys got me. He said, what do you mean? No, that was real. I said, what do you mean it was real? He said, yeah. He said, no, that footage that was on the countdown show was filmed ages ago. He said, yeah, I'm going to be in the corner because we're buddies. He said, I haven't been a part of his camp. I've been in Brazil training Paulo Costa and another couple of guys. He said, so yeah, no, that was true. That was real. Volkanovski says, that makes Henry a piece of shit. What say you guys?
Well, look, dude, I thought this was him trying to put him over, but I don't know, dude, like Eric did say, right, to be fair, he did say, you know, I knew something was coming when he pulled me aside and we were on camera. And it's like, I invented the king of cringe character with Henry. Like, you have to kind of expect this coming. So it's like, I don't know, dude, you made money with the guy for two decades. Like, you kind of got to do the favors and get fired on camera at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, Brian, jump on and let's have a three-way discussion, if you don't mind. This is what I liked, because I've spoken to them both quite a lot. And they're both cool with it. Eric's fine with it. They're buddies. He said, but, and you'll know where I'm going with this now. He said, listen, we've been friends for a very long time. Sometimes we fall out. You know what I mean? He said, we're fucking brothers. We're brothers. And sometimes we tell each other to go fuck themselves. You know, sometimes we really fall out. He said, yeah, maybe a few days later, it's all forgotten about. And I was like, well, yeah, but that's how you know that you're really friends. Because it's only with true friends, you know, because like if you can't truly be yourself, sometimes you got to put a false nicety on it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like your brothers at home, siblings, you love them, but sometimes you do want to strangle them. But like real friends, you do fall out, but it still means you care for them. Still means if they need anything, you'll still help them. And over a few days or a few weeks or even a few months, right, you forget about it and you're always there to depend on one another. And I thought that was a really good point and I totally get it.
Yeah, I mean, they did say they butt heads from time to time, but he was like, look, I was down in Brazil with these guys who are actually brothers and I watched them. They hadn't seen each other for a month. The first day there, they're at each other's things because that's how brothers are. And he's like, if that's not what that guy needed for this camp, you know, you can't fault him, right? Like he said that they trained Davis and Figueiredo together to a world title. He's like, let him coach himself. See how it works.
Let Brian speak.
Sorry.
No, you're good, man. I don't have too much to think about this situation. I just think that it's a real piece of shit move that, number one, that they faked that it was like a more like a very recent firing, and that two, that he did it on camera. Like, I don't know if they set that bit up ahead of time or if they set it up ahead of time. He's like, hey, buddy, we're going to fire you on camera. No, well, that's fucked up, man. You know what I mean? Like, if you fired me on air, like if you brought me on air to like on a show to fire me one day. Dude, I would be so fucking pissed. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a bad look for everybody, I think.
Well, listen, guys, I hate to say this to you. I did actually call you here for a reason today. And, you know, the way the show's been going lately, you know, and, you know, with the inconsistencies and whatnot, guys, this is the last ever show. I'm starting up with Helmani. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And then, all right, so that's a nice little preview. Who wins that fight, Marab? Listen, Marab's a monster, man. He never stops coming forward. The cardio is absolutely insane. The pressure, the wrestling, the boxing's decent as well. I think Henry Cejudo, when he fought Aljamain Sterling, I think he put too much stock in the wrestling. I think he thought he was going to out-wrestle him relatively easily. Right? That didn't go to plan. He wasted his gas tank. Henry all week has been talking about he had a terrible weight cut because he came back after 3 years. He got the weight cut process wrong. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. Right? Only he knows that. I've got to take him at face value. Right? I don't think he's making excuses. But he wouldn't have got as tired if he wasn't trying to wrestle. So who does got heavy hands? Right? Knocked out Cruz. Knocked out Dillashaw. I think he made a critical mistake there. That's just a nice way of setting this up. But who the hell do you think wins this fight?
Well, good luck knocking Marab out, I think. Like, he's one, you know, Russian bear fighter. So, like, that's going to be tough. I honestly think this is just one more name on Marab's resume to a title fight.
Hmm. I don't know, dude. This feels like it could be This has a chance on Saturday to be the biggest night in Georgian MMA history, right? You got Ilya going for the title. You got Merab clearly stepping into that undisputed number one contender position with a win. Merab has not been knocked out before. He was submitted after the bell by Ricky Simone. But I don't know, dude. Like, it's tough for me when Henry Cejudo's best weapon is his wrestling, and all Merab wants to do is be in the clinch with you, working those wrestling positions and becoming the lower man, being the grittier guy with the better gas tank. You know, he's the younger man. Everything about this has me leaning Merab.
And when I spoke to Merab as well, he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder. I mean, the thing is, when you look at Merab, he hasn't fought very frequently. I think one time in 2023, 2022, once, 2021, once, 2020, once. Do you know what I'm saying? So the strength of schedule has been terrible. But he did say, he said, listen, he's kind of annoyed. Listen, I can't do a Merab accent, but when I beat Aldo, he had to beat Marlon Vera at time, and I didn't get to fight. When O'Malley beat Piotr Jan, he get title fight. When I beat Piotr Jan, I don't get this. Is if I don't get this fight this weekend, then this is fucking, this is shit. Yeah, no, he's pissed off. If he doesn't get it, I thought that was pretty good, actually. That wasn't bad for Merab.
You nailed that, yeah. I was like, what are you talking about, you know, the Merab?
I did an interview with him, and I thought he was fucking with me, because I asked him about something, and I used the word valued, right? And he's like, and he kept trying to say values. Like, what is the word? And I'm like, valued? Yes. And he's like, he kept stopping, and then he kept trying to say it, and then go, and like, Merab's a funny little bastard.
I think he's inadvertently funny.
Yeah, but I thought he was doing a bit. You know what I'm saying? I thought I'm like, all right, stop it now. He says, what do you mean, stop this? Anyway, so, it's a tough one for both men. And there it is. There's a nice little preview of the big fights on UFC 298. Herringbone, non-MMA time.
Ooh.
All right. We'll start with Vladimir Putin. What's he saying these days? Because I know Brian's going to have some input on this one.
Ooh, so the comments on this are probably going to echo what Brian's going to say, but Vladimir Putin says that Russia is very close to releasing a vaccine that will prevent against cancer. It did not say in the initial report what forms of cancer it's going to provide vaccination from, but the idea is you get this vaccination and cancer cells will not be able to form in your body.
So look, listen, by all accounts, you know, the medical industry withhold a lot of very, very useful drugs that they don't release to the market because the pharmaceutical companies make so much money. And that's what they want. Like, just for example, just recently, again, they're trying to push it down our throats that fats are bad for you, right? And eggs are bad for you. They cause cholesterol. Once again, I saw a report. The FDA did a report and the eggs, you got to avoid eggs again. It's like, no, eggs are great for you. Eggs have everything in. So you can't believe everything you say. Now, when it comes to vaccines, right? I was wrong. I had this whole COVID stance. I was wrong, right? I don't give a fuck. I'm not a proud man. I'll say, yeah, all right, I got that one wrong. I will say this, and this is nothing to do with COVID. The skepticism on this one. Let's take a guy that's potentially on the verge of World War III, right? And he's going to create a vaccine to cure cancer or, you know, stop cancer. I'm just saying, on that one, I'd be a little bit hesitant about taking it.
There are so many end of the world movies that start with this premise. This is how you make zombies and vampires and like monster. Like this is how it happens. You're like, oh, look, cure for cancer. And the next thing you know, you have like your mailman eating your face when he shows up to your house. Like it's just how movies work.
Oh, well, God.
Here's how the real world works, though. If this guy, right, can come out with a cure for cancer, right, if he can literally cure cancer, he is going to look like a hero the world over. Not only that, he's going to cost the American pharmaceutical companies that make tons and tons of money treating cancer instead of curing cancer. He's going to cost them a ton of money, which is only it's a massive blow to the American financial system. So it's like, that's a win-win-win for him if he is able to provide this vaccine. And it's like, why not trust that?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I'm no cancer expert. That's going to shock everyone listening. But but it's only a matter of time, you know, as medical science gets better and better. I mean, the stuff they can do now that they couldn't do 10 years ago, 20 years ago is ridiculous. And I'm all for it. And I would love to see that become a reality one day. And hopefully it does. And hopefully, who knows, maybe this is it. Maybe this is one of the breakthroughs that they need. But to your point, Harrington, I mean, it would cost the pharmaceutical company so much money. You know, I was bored the other day, and being English, right, you're not going to like this. But this is true, because I've lived in two countries for a long period of time. And we have the NHS, and most countries have a national health service, right? Mm-hmm. And granted, I will say this, the service isn't as good as what I get here, because I pay a shit ton of money every month. Right? Right. And granted, right now in the UK, particularly because of strikes and, you know, government funding and stuff like that, the service is getting more and more appalling almost by the week. However, you know, you also don't see people that get hit by cars or anything like that, or get a sickness, illness, and they're having to sell their fucking houses and all the rest of it. They still get the treatment that they need. And I started looking into like all the different drugs, and there's charts you can find online. The cost to the American medicine purchaser for the American is about six times more expensive than the majority of the rest of the world. And it's because of the pharmaceutical companies. It's just insane. I mean, a quick look at it, you show these graphs, and some America's up here. They're all down here. And then there's a couple of like weird African countries that for some reason, probably because to get the drugs in there, you got to get past like the military coup or something like that. But generally, yeah, the States is about at least three times more expensive. It's wild.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, they price it that high so that the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance company can argue over it and meet somewhere in the middle, which is typically why if you tell your doctor, hey, I'm uninsured, they'll be like, oh, cool, and just put you down for a generic that costs one tenth of the you know, on label pill that your insurance company is going to pay out Pfizer for. And it's like, it really is like a big, you know, circle jerk between all these companies.
But it's crazy, because my point is that this is the only country out of most of them, you know, where you have to pay privately or you have to pay your insurance, you know, and it's way more expensive because it is a business, because it's crooked and it's fucking bullshit. It really is. I mean, it's such a business. Why is medicine in the one country where every individual has to pay massive amounts of insurance the most expensive? I mean, it doesn't take a scientist to work it out that a lot of people are getting very, very fucking wealthy.
Not only that, but we're we might be the only country in the world that has drug advertisements on TV.
Oh, no, that is absolutely
correct.
It's
illegal in Europe.
It's 100% illegal. And it's all you get on the TV out here when I watch TV, you know. And they have the catchy little jingles. You know, catchy little jingles, you know what I mean? They're all singing away like, oh, Tesla, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean?
Tesla.
No, it's all Tesla. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, oh, you don't want to exercise? Here, put this fucking injection in your stomach. Like, that's, it's so broken. But a tinfoil hat on, your point, exactly. Maybe that's why America has this agenda of regime change in Russia, is because they're about to put out something that's going to fucking ruin the economy entirely.
I mean, I always say this, and you never know. Maybe, Brian.
I'm just making that up right now.
Yeah, tinfoil hat time, of course. Like, I haven't had one for a very, very long time. But cold sores, right? You guys call it fucking herpes. We call it cold sores in England, okay? Way more palatable.
Yeah, I agree.
I get the occasional cold sore now and again. I haven't had one for a while. In England, you just go down to the chemist, you go to Boots or whatever it is, and you buy some Zevirax. It costs you £2.95 or whatever it is. In America, you're going to go to the doctor, which, by the way, you're going to have a copay for. If you see the doctor, it's a $60 payment on top of the insurance, right? Then you get the prescription, then you go down there. When I see the paperwork, the insurance company are being billed like $700 for a tiny little thing of this cold sore cream. Do you know what I mean? And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it's just insane. Anyway, the point of what I was saying is, yeah, look, but anytime I say anything like that, oh, socialism, communism, it's like, it's not socialism, it's not communism, it's just that fucking we don't all get our pants pulled down, you know? You got a great service, but there's issues.
It's actually like more of like an oligarchy or closer to fascism, you know, because it's like government mandated price hikes because of all these like loops and holes that they got to run through. And then there's no control on the prices of things after that. So they can just chart like this guy, the guy who's on LOS, whatever, last year, the guy who bought Martin the Shkreli. AIDS drug, Martin Shkreli. He's like, yeah, fuck it. I raised the price of this 5,000% because I need to make money. And it's just like, how are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, because we're going to get back into some MMA stuff and some fun stuff in a minute. I saw Umbruvica, I think the drug was. I saw this video, and in the States, it cost a person. It's if you have leukemia. And we're going to get back onto something in a minute, but I saw this, and that's what caused me to go down this deep dive. It costs somebody that sadly has leukemia $190,000 a year. And the pharmaceutical company is making net profits of like 20 odd billion a year off this one drug. And she was getting questioned in Congress, and she didn't have the answers to any questions whatsoever. So I Googled it. And of course, you can't trust everything you say on Google, but it's like a fraction of the cost in most of other countries. And this is a drug designed to help people with a life-threatening disease like leukemia. And these motherfuckers are making so much money and making it so expensive. And it's just horrible. It's actually fucking evil, if you ask me. I mean, listen, you're going to make money. I get that, but come on.
Like that drug you were just talking about, $18,000 for what I can imagine is a month's supply.
It's a month, yeah, per month.
18 grand.
18 grand a month.
Fuck.
Yeah. And if you have insurance, you're still going to pay 20, for non-American listeners, if you have insurance, you're still going to pay 20% of that.
Yeah.
I do. On my policy, you still have to pay 20%. If you have insurance, you still got to pay 20%. You know, if I call an ambulance, that's $5,000.
Yeah.
If we have to go to hospital, it's $10,000 a night in a hospital.
And you're
responsible. If Rebecca gets pregnant, she's not covered. She better not get fucking pregnant, okay?
Yeah, especially since didn't you get snipped?
I didn't get snipped, no. I decided.
Good for you.
If we do have some kind of like mass extinction, we need some prime DNA, guys. I'm doing service to humanity by keeping the bloodline going. Anyway, enough of that shit. What else have we got in terms of? Well, we apologize, guys. We went down a rabbit hole there. Any big news or regarding MMA?
Well, this apparently is going to be the last show that we'll do when we don't know what the UFC 300 main event is, because Dana White says that he is going to announce it at the post-fight press conference at UFC 298.
Well, can I just say, on behalf of everybody watching this show, following mixed martial arts, fans of the UFC, thank God, because the discussion over this, I can't take it anymore. I really can't. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited for all UFC events. But it's like every episode of this bloody podcast, you're bringing up UFC 300 main event. I click onto Twitter. It's all people are talking about. For crying out loud, the tickets go on sale in a few days, so they got to announce something. That's it. We're not doing it again. But who's your pick real quick?
Well, I know who one guy who my pick definitely isn't.
Who?
Hamzat Chimaev, who says that he is not willing to fight during Ramadan anymore. So because that's happening in April, he's going to bow out. That being said, I'm going to say Izzy versus Dricus.
Izzy versus Dricus. That's probably my front runner as well. All right, fellas, are you sick of wasting money on testosterone boosters that just don't work? Well, I don't blame you. That is why our sponsor today, Nugenix Total T, lets you try before you buy. You can get a complimentary sample when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword believe. As you're getting older, the testosterone is dipping, the energy goes, the results from the workout, the libido, the very thing that makes you a man is starting to fade away. Every single year is getting lower and lower. So give it a boost and do it without turning your backside into a dartboard, okay? You haven't got to go down the doctor. You haven't got to get on You haven't got to get on testosterone replacement therapy. No, you got to get on the Nugenics Total T, which contains boosting key ingredients like Testafem, which has been shown in clinical studies to boost free testosterone levels in men. This is an unprecedented formula with science-backed key ingredients to safely maximize your free and total testosterone levels. It helps you increase muscle mass and skyrocket your performance as you age. Now, listen, don't be misled. Every product professes quality, but many use generic ingredients far less than the clinical grade. With Nugenics Total T, you get premium key ingredients at the exact same powerful clinical potency used in the trials. Check this out. Nugenics is the number one doctor recommended brand and the number one selling testosterone booster on the market for a GNC and Walmart. Okay. Nugenics Total T will help you re-energize your life. And I'm telling you, you can get a complimentary bottle right now when you text 231-231 and you enter the keyword believe. Do that right now and also get a bottle of Nugenics Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator available ever. Okay, all you got to do, get it for free, lose weight, get lean, feel better, absolutely free by texting 231-231 and enter the keyword believe. 231-231, keyword believe. Shorter show today, guys. Because we've got things to do, people to see, places to be. And we're already going over our time. We're recording this one late, thanks to Gilbert Burns. Brian's losing his mind because he's got to edit this up and get it up in just a few hours. So if you got a question, you send it into bympod@gmail.com. Believe us, let me just say real quick, the pace of the questions, the quality of the questions, it's dropped off, it's fallen off, and you need to get your shit together. You want a question? You want it answered? You send it into bympod@gmail.com.
And if you're listening on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts, make sure to subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps us out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new episode drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BY and get a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the network.
Okay, so first question we have here today is from a Mr. Lee Bosworth.
Ah, what's up, Lee?
Just a quick couple of questions. Yeah, I'm sending this one from the love pit because I'm a bit under the weather. But first of all, do you think Jamal Hill is the most underrated champion of all time? Because that man is unbelievable and his performance against Glover was probably one of the best I've ever seen in the UFC. And the second question is, do you think jiu-jitsu is becoming more or less effective in the UFC due to takedown defense and people being able to do slam knockouts and all this? Just like to hear your take and what you'd like to say on that topic. But, Harren, it doesn't matter what you say. Go fuck yourself.
How are you, man? Thanks, Lee. Really appreciate the question. You know, shout out is probably in Geordie. Is it probably in Newcastle. I'm sounding like bloody Marab. Right. Jamal Hill. Is he underrated? Sorry, very tired. Underrated. I don't think so. He was the champ. He relinquished the belt, tore his calf. What do you think? I don't think so. I mean, look at that knockout he had over Johnny Walker. Unbelievable. Look at what Johnny Walker's doing. Other than Paul Craig catching him in that submission, I think he's undefeated, right? So, I don't think he is. I'm looking forward to him coming back. I think he's got a tough time when he comes back. Him, Alex Pereira, Magomed Ankalaev, both very, very tough matchups. If he can get through either one of them, or if he can get through both of them, he might rule light heavyweight for quite some time.
It's fair. I see more people online talking about how Magomed would beat him up, right? Or he's got no chance against Alex Pereira than I've seen with any champion in a very long time. So I will say probably a little bit. I would agree that he's a little bit underrated just because I don't think people, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's just not solidified with Jamal as a champion, despite the win over Glover, a former champion himself. So.
Yeah. And then the second part of the question is jiu-jitsu underutilized these days in modern mixed martial arts? And I think Lee's actually onto a point there, because I think to a certain degree it is. Obviously, you got guys like an Islam, or you got guys like a Charles Oliveira, Damian Myers in the past, Jake Shields, et cetera, et cetera. But as this newer generations, continue, you know, and as more time passes, I think it's becoming less effective. Not because it's not effective as an art, it's because you're getting less and less specialists because everybody trains mixed martial arts. They don't necessarily start off doing jiu-jitsu. They're not experts in one field. You know, the sport's getting bigger. They start training with an eye to doing, you know, mixed martial arts. And even when I was training back in the day, I used to get frustrated sometimes, you know, because you spar or you do jiu-jitsu, even when I was doing jiu-jitsu, because we did mixed martial arts as well, our jiu-jitsu was for mixed martial arts. They were just, everyone would work back to the feet. And when you got back to your feet, then you restarted from an even position again. You know what I mean? And sometimes, and I used to do that as well because I was practicing my get-ups. But sometimes I'd be like, well, can you just not do that? Can we just actually try and do some jiu-jitsu? Can we try and sweep? Can we try and submit? You know what I mean? As opposed to just stalemating and negating the offense in terms of grappling and finishing ability and getting back to your feet. Of course, for strikers, we want to get back to our feet. But by doing that, we're not sharpening the tools. And I think generally, yes, listen, arm bars, rear necky chokes, things like that, of course, they still work and they still have a place. And of course, you've got to learn how to defend them. But I think the people that are having the skill of practicing them and finishing with them is becoming less and less. And I would actually be very interested, and maybe I'm wrong, to see the percentage. Brian, see if you can look this up. The percentage of submission finishes in 2023 compared to 2013 or 2005. I bet it is vastly different. Of course, the sport isn't as much of a secret as it was in 1993. So people are aware of this. We've seen the sport. We've seen the art. We know how good it is and how effective it is. And we know how to defend it against them. But I do think that, yeah, to answer his question, anyone with a shred of decency as a fighter knows how to defend all the submissions. Granted, with punches, with elbows, you soften them up before you go for the submission. But yeah, I do think it's probably a bit more underutilized as an art these days.
Well, I mean, you know, just by definition, it kind of has to be, right? Because going back to like UFC 1, UFC 2, if you knew any jiu-jitsu, you were going to dominate the field of competition. So there was a time where being a jiu-jitsu specialist meant like you were a champion in waiting. Now we see the jiu-jitsu specialists, the Cron Gracies of the world, you know, Claudio Puelas, I think, was the last one where he just kept butt scooting, trying to get somebody to the ground. The Ryan Halls of the world haven't really worked out at the highest level. So I think it's, yeah, sure, the specialists, you know, aren't as prevalent, but I do think the guys who have that strong jiu-jitsu game in their tool belt, the Charles Oliveiras and the Gilbert Burns of the world, show that, you know, it is still a very, very, you know, you can use it at a championship level. You just got to have the hands.
Oh, listen.
Too.
Without question, it's an absolute essential fundamental. It's a fundamental in the array of skills that a mixed martial artist should have. But I'm just saying, I just think as the sport is becoming more about nullifying, defending, getting back to your feet, defending takedowns, probably, you know, wrestling isn't quite as effective these days either because people are learning how to stop takedowns. And certainly when you're mixing the cage grappling, the cage offense, I mean, everything's different. Like, look at... And it was actually Henry Cejudo that said this. Aljamain Sterling routinely, pretty much, throughout that fight when he fought Henry Cejudo, was able to take Cejudo down. Cejudo's a better wrestler, but against the fence, it changes everything, right? It's a completely different game. Like, and I even said to Henry, I've trained with some wrestlers that are really, really good wrestlers. I was never a wrestler per se. I learned a bit of wrestling. But even against the fence, I could take people down. Again, out in the open, I'd struggle. But against the fence, it's fucking easy if you know how to do it. So it just, everything's changing or has changed. So, but yeah, Lee, thank you for your question. How are you, man? Thanks, Pet. Brian, we got another question, Pet.
Yeah, sorry. I was just trying to do some quick maths.
No. Do we have the start?
I'm looking for how many submission wins happened in 2005, but I have 102 submissions in 2023, 102 submissions in 520 fights. And in 2005, there was only 80 fights.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got to find out the number of submissions in that year. But
how many submissions in 2015?
I will figure that out as I play this question from Matthias.
Thank you.
What up, Michael? What up, Anthony? Big fan of the show. Matthijs here from Amsterdam. I got a question for you guys about the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, because, of course, we as fans see everything that happens in front of the camera, whether it's the interviews, the fights, the post-fight show, whatever. But I was wondering if you maybe could lift the curtains a little bit on what goes on backstage, dressing room stories, something funny, something fucked up, awkward stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I don't know, anything. I know there's like a code in the dressing room, so maybe you can't name any names. That's all good. I just hope you have can make us laugh or whatever. Big fan of the show, like I said. Big shout out to you guys, Michael, Anthony, Harrington. Not gonna lie, whenever you appear on camera during interviews or with Michael, your faces, like the faces you make, are cringe as fuck. But for the rest, you're a pretty stand up guy. So shout out to you as well. If you end up putting my question through, shout out to you as well. All right, later, guys.
Oh, God. Wow. Matthijs, thank you. Thank you. No, smoking a pancake. Thank you very much, Matthijs, for the question. Backstage, I mean, it's a good laugh. It's a good laugh. You can't pull back the curtain too far. Let me see. I'm trying to think of any stories. I can't think of any off the top of my head. You've put me right on the spot. But there's always good energy. You know, you get there backstage, let's say the Apex, you know, you got to get your makeup done. Well, first of all, you get there early. And we're all having our food, and the UFC are great at providing food. I always order DoorDash, though. I get my steak and eggs from the same place every time. And everyone's buzzing about. Everyone's walking around. You walk in. Rashad's there. Michael Chiesa. Anthony's there. You know, Karen Bryant's getting her makeup done. You know, the producers are running past. Fucking, there's a lot of energy because everyone's rushing, you know. But in terms of stories, feeling about the curtain, I have nothing right now that I can offer. I'm a failure. I really am. But Harrington, I know the faces he's talking about. No, you're great. You're great. You're great. No, you are. You're fantastic. You're fantastic. And I'm so appreciative of you. But we always want to learn, and you don't do it as much anymore. You don't.
Really? I've stopped because I actively try to do it. That's the goal. The goal is to emote.
No, because I'm far from perfect. You know what I mean? Four. Do you know what I mean? And I have no doubt lots of criticisms as well. So I'm not piggybacking and giving you shit. I'm like, oh yeah, I know what Matthijs is. I don't know. So it's like, you don't have to look that shocked. Yeah, exactly. Oh dear. We will be back on Monday. Harrington will be here. Thank you, Harrington.
Thanks for having me. Honor and privilege as always, Mr. Bisping.
Everyone's like, oh, picking on Harrington. I'm not picking on him. That was Matthijs.
That's fair. Just so we clear this up, there's 473 fights in 2015 and 89 submissions.
So what was the percentage in?
It's not too far apart if we had 520 fights in 2023 with 102 submissions.
Oh, so it's actually trending the other way, more submissions.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, I stand corrected, see? I don't know everything.
Well, I mean, those could be wrestling submissions too. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Harrington. Guys, we will be back on Monday. Please subscribe and ring the bell if you haven't done so already. Enjoy your weekends, and we're going to have a big roundup of fights. And I'm dropping some interviews that I did yesterday on the channel. So be coming back on the daily for the content. Goodbye. Take care.